radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Human being located where there's so much information to take, then you enter any time you play. Once you get on the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanley, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
Respect for what is our theme, and I'm faltering belief. could be.
Heaven here on earth.
You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton, and it's a pleasure to be your host and facilitator here on today's program. We started off the program with a message in the music from Tracy Chapman, Heaven is Here on Earth. And I know it sounds strange with all the war and pestilence and the negative energy permeating. It's hard to grasp that heaven is here on earth, and it is indeed, because this is the great teaching, the great challenge that the Creator creates and pronounced it good. Now, the so-called problems and challenges and the issues that we have, they're part of life, but it is good. And we're going to talk about it. I'm going to share an experience that my wife and I had a little over a week ago. We were in an accident, and we'll talk about it when we come back from this break. Don't go anywhere. You're logged on to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul.
We'd like to welcome everybody checking in from Real Media Player, from Windows Media Player, from iTunes. We want to encourage everyone to log into our website, which is blakeradio.com, and become familiar with how you can access our broadcast directly from our website. And vice versa, those of you who check in directly from the Blake Radio Network, become familiar with how you can also access us through Real Media Player, through Windows Media Player, and iTunes by logging into their radio tuner guides and doing a search for us in the talk radio genre. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Junius Ricardo Stanton here with some truly great news. The Blake Radio Network has officially released the new Rainbow Soul iPhone and Android apps worldwide. Now, there's also an HTML version for all other cell phones. The apps can be accessed from www.blakeradio.com on the Rainbow Soul page or directly from the iPhone App Store or Android Market. These apps will allow you to lock in exclusively to the Rainbow Soul broadcast with the touch of a button. These acquisitions complete the development and release of all the apps for the Blake Radio Network family of channels, which includes Rainbow Soul, the Alt Talk Channel, and Music Massage, an eclectic mix of R&B, jazz, soul, and reggae slow jams for your listening edification and entertainment. So take full advantage of this opportunity for connectivity and mobility by downloading your respective app from your source. Continue listening to the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul and Music Massage.
I am Professor Maynu M. Pym. Our Save Nubia campaign is focused on preserving the ancient African civilizations of Kush and Nubia, which must be considered World Heritage Sites under threat. These great civilizations along the Nile in Northeast Africa are in jeopardy of having their central areas permanently flooded. currently, the Sudanese government is in the process of building 4 new dams in northern and central Sudan to create hydroelectricity. However, local Sudanese groups in these regions oppose these dam projects because they will destroy their homelands and way of life along the Nile. The Nubians, the Manasir, and the Amri are among the groups that oppose these projects. In fact, the World Commission on Dams examined over 1,000 of the 45,000 large dams around the world. And in its report, the commission made it clear that no dam should be built unless the local affected communities agree to the project and are consulted at each stage of the construction process. And of course, none of this is taking place in the Sudan. For example, the people were not even consulted about the recently completed Marowei Dam at the Fourth Cataract, which was completed in 2008 and created a 108-mile-long reservoir, which displaced about 70,000 people and flooded a minimum of 2,500 unexcavated ancient Kushite archaeological sites. The Manasir and other displaced groups still have not been compensated for the flooding of their homeland. Let's be clear that electricity is an uncontested factor for a country to develop, but the means to acquire this electricity is often contested and controversial. There are other viable forms of energy available in the Sudan, such as solar panels and wind turbines. But these alternate sources of energy have not been considered because they are not as financially lucrative for those involved. The Save Nubia campaign is in support of the local people in their efforts to save their homeland. The 4 proposed dams in the Sudan will each have a devastating impact on this archaeological region. The 2nd through the 5th cataracts represent a central corridor of the ancient Kush and Nubia regions. Despite Sudanese sites of El Kuru, Nuri, Jebel Barkel, Dongola, Bagrawiya, and Meroe, which yield 223 pyramids in Sudan, there is still much more in this vast archaeological region that is not known because of the lack of excavation work and field research. For example, during the construction of the Marowei Dam, there was a shocking discovery of 700 brand new, previously unknown archaeological sites that were found in just 1 year, which all are now flooded. Our Save Nubia campaign has several goals. 1, to raise funds to conduct ongoing field research to thoroughly document the historical significance of this region. 2, press forward with our campaign until this rich archaeological region is considered by UNESCO as a World Heritage Site under threat. 3, assist the local Sudanese people in the 2nd and 3rd cataract areas to build 2 to 3 museums to help highlight and preserve their heritage and historical contributions to the world. Join our campaign. Assist us in making a difference in preserving ancient African history and culture. Our voice is the call of the local Sudanese people who have asked that we help to amplify the volume of their struggle for cultural survival. The Nubians say that they have seen the negative impact of the Aswan High Dam in southern Egypt and the Marowei Dam in northern Sudan, and they don't trust the current dam construction collaboration between the Sudanese government on the one hand and the Chinese construction companies on the other. The 2007 Kashbar Dam massacre is an example of this grassroots effort of cultural resistance to the dams. We cannot allow the historical evidence of African greatness to be destroyed on our watch. I trust that you will use your time, your talent, and your resources to contribute to our campaign to save the ancient African civilizations of Kush and Nubia. Join our cause.
Gracious, Professor Griff, you're listening to Junius. Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griffin, Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
As I was mentioning, the message in the music selection, Tracy Chapman, Heaven is Here on Earth. To many, this would sound like folly, foolishness, and many would suggest that those who adhere to this point of view had lost their mind, lost grasp of reality. But I beg to differ. I believe that our reality is based on our consciousness. Our consciousness is based on whether or not we are open to receiving new information, particularly from internal sources, whether it's intuition or through meditation or through just trance, that state where agitation is lessened and we're relaxed and the brain waves are more mellow and we're in a more receptive mood and we can get the images and the audio from, some call it the ancestors, some call it the spirit world. I just say it's from the universe. And this consciousness, this awareness, this vision, if you're attuned rightly, correctly, you can see the potential, the possibilities, as opposed to being so jaded and so negative. And I just wanted to share an experience about a week ago, a little over a week ago. My wife and I were returning from Maryland, and I was a little drowsy. I came out of the harbor tunnel, and I was looking for a particular route. We're heading north to New Jersey, and I missed the exit to get on Route 40, so I kept on going, but something within me just kept saying, get off of here. We were on I-95 North, and the interesting thing is once we left the people's home we were visiting, once we got on the road, my wife fell asleep. So she was sleeping, nodding off and on through the trip. And the people live in Upper Marlboro, so we got into Baltimore and through the tunnels and out that way. And I was fighting drowsiness. And I dozed off or nodded off. Next thing I knew, I heard my wife calling. Car, we were in the left-hand lane. The car was drifting off the road toward a road sign, sign markers. So I swerved to avoid that and struggled to regain control of the car. And the car eventually moved back to the left and off the road and down into the median. And we were going down at a fairly rapid rate. Car, fortunately, the median was wide enough that we didn't bounce up into the southbound lane, but we went down into the swell and the car flipped over. Remained conscious the whole time. I saw everything, was trying to slow the car down. When we hit the bottom and flipped over, my wife was safe, unhurt. We were in restraint with the seat belts. We're upside down. I had the presence of mind to turn the car off because I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I didn't want it to explode or catch fire or anything. But I couldn't get out of the seat belt. And next thing I know, there's a young brother asking me if I'm okay. And I told him I couldn't get out. I needed him to help me to try to get my wife out. And my wife says that he kicked the window in because I couldn't get the driver's side door open. I couldn't get her seatbelt unfastened. I couldn't get my seatbelt unfastened. Next thing I know, he's reaching in through the window across me unfastening the seatbelts, and he pulls me out. And then as I get out, some other folks come on the scene, and they get my wife out. And there are about 10 folks sitting there. I hear someone say they called 911, and they ministered to us. They made sure that she was secure and immobile. They kept talking to her, reassuring her everything was all right. She said she was okay. One of them was a nurse. The nurse said she was in shock, but she was basically saying she was just trying to remain calm. My arm was bleeding. Several people came offering me towels, t-shirts. One lady came with ice. And the paramedics came from both sides. One came up northbound, another one came up southbound. So I heard them discussing who was going to take jurisdiction. So the ones who had come on the southbound side said they would take it. State Trooper Maryland, State Trooper came, talked to them. We got all that squared away. They put us both on boards, put neck braces on us to keep us immobile. Said they were taking us to the hospital just to have us checked out. We were taken to a hospital in Baltimore. The people talked to me, asked me where am I. Before the police and the trooper and the paramedics got there, they asked me where my wallet was. They got my wallet, my cell phone, my wife's pocketbook. I was given my wallet. There was no money missing. My credit cards were all there. Everything was there. And they were so kind, so calm, so reassuring, and so into helping. I mean, it was almost like an energy of compassion, caring, and helping. And that carried over when the professionals got there, when the trooper and the ETMs got there. Took us to Baltimore. The hospital was the same type of environment, same kind of energy. They put my wife in one room, put me in another triage area. They would come back and talk to me and let me know what was going on. They said she was okay. They examined me and said that my arm would require sutures and that they were going to give me an x-ray to make sure there was no glass in the wound. And so they did that. I found her and they let me stay with her, and they came and they sutured me up. And the nurse, the x-ray technician, doctors, all of them were top flight professionals, upbeat, positive. And I got a chance to walk around the triage area in the emergency department so I could see other people being treated. And for the most part, the people were professional. There were some folks acting out. When I got back, the nurse told me that we were in a fairly rough section of Baltimore. And they said a lot of the people that they treat have been abusing themselves for a long time. And once they stitched me up, was ready to go, filled out all the paperwork, we explained to them that the trooper came to the hospital, told me, he gave me a citation, and he told me where my car was towed. And so we had no way of getting home. We discussed it. We thought about calling friends or relatives. It's okay. A couple of hours away from the Philadelphia area where we just left. Her niece just had a baby, so we didn't want to call them because they'd have to find, you know, it's only a couple of weeks old, whatever. So we nixed that. I have a cousin that lives in the Baltimore area, but I don't have his number. And the nurse said, okay, well, maybe we can help. So he took us to the patient relations director. We explained our situation. She said, well, maybe might be able to help. They arranged for a cab to take us to Pennsylvania Station. We got to the station. I'm all, you know, bloody. My shorts are bloody. My t-shirt is bloody. We still had the hospital ID, emergency room bracelets on. We get to the station about 5:07. I walk in. I'm looking around.
trying to figure out where we are in relation to the logistics within Pennsylvania Station. I look at the board, trying to figure out what trains are coming in. Go to the ticket agent, ticket office, ask the lady. She tells I want two tickets. She's processing me. You know, you got to have our photo ID and you have credit cards and all that kind of stuff. And she tells me that the next train going to New York, because I was looking for Philadelphia. She says, next train going north, going to New York, is at 7:05. By then, it's 7:01. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, we're never going to make it. She finishes. We get finished maybe at 7:02. They tell us where to go. We get there. We're able to board the train. We're probably one of the last people boarding the train. We get on. It's a short ride from Baltimore because there's only a couple of stops, Aberdeen, Wilmington, and then Philadelphia. We get out, of course, the 30th Street Station. There's a crowd. It's Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening. A lot of taxis. So we get a taxi. We go to the Patco high-speed line downtown and get the train. There's a train there, but they're waiting for another train to come in. They can't pull off until another train comes in. We get that. We get into New Jersey, into the stop in Haddonfield, which is fairly close. We live between Haddonfield and another stop, but I figured there'd be more access to a cab at Haddonfield, because it's a town. My phone has enough life, battery has enough life in it. I make a phone call to the cab company, and we wait a couple of minutes for a cab and we go home. I say all that to say, miracles do happen. And on the way home, I thought about all the things that could have happened. How I could have fallen asleep, not waking up, crashed, or even when I tried to gain control of the vehicle, could have swerved into another lane, another car could have ran up behind me, hit me on the side, all kinds of things. I could have bounced, made it through that, went into the medium, into the gully, and popped up out onto the southbound and been hit by other cars. None of that happened. Car didn't explode, didn't catch fire. About 10 people came to our aid. All kinds of people, black, Hispanic, Europeans. They were all so kind, all so caring, concerned, and compassionate. And there was an aura or energy about that whole scene. It was surreal. And it carried on through the synchronicity, getting us to the hospital. I'm not injured other than required five or six stitches, scrapes and bruises, what have you. Sonia, my wife, is totally unscathed, no bruises, bumps, or anything, no psychological trauma. She was overwhelmed just thinking about it. We're able to, once the train got to Aberdeen, it was jammed up. We couldn't barely found seats, so we didn't sit together at that. And once we got to Aberdeen, the lady that was sitting next to her got off, so I was able to sit with her. You know, I was a couple of rows behind her. And just the whole synchronicity of all of that, the fact that nobody was hurt, nobody took advantage of us in a negative way, nobody took my money, took my credit card, anything like that. The fact that people stopped and came to our aid, to our rescue. And even the trooper was somewhat apologetic about giving me a citation. And he said, well, I gave you, and I was asking him, well, is this going to mean points on my record? And he said, well, I don't think so. And so he gave me a citation for failing to control the vehicle. And the fine is not that much as opposed to what it could have been. And so all of that, and I'm thinking to myself, as the days pass, I'm still in that mindset that this was a miracle. And I'm thinking, what if the majority of people on this planet related to each other the way that those people related to me? What if the consciousness was one of helping, service, one of not seeing the external or people's clothing, people's how much money you have or don't have, but just out of compassion. What if that was not an isolated incident? What type of world would this be? What type of country would this be? What type of immediate environment would this be? And I know that this was an emotional experience because, like I said, we were not injured. The car was total. 2 days later, we went down, back down to Maryland, went to where it was towed. It was towed to Parkville, Maryland. And we got our clothing and some other materials. I had all my cameras and my recorders and some of the other equipment and some other material out. Just looked at the car. And that reinforced and reiterated just how miraculous it was. Because when the car flipped over, obviously it flipped over on its roof. The whole windshield was smashed, and I saw that day. I was treated at the hospital. Thus far, there have been no new injuries. I did discover, you know, some nicks and scrapes and scratches from, I guess, the glass on my hand and my wrist. But they weren't serious enough to warrant anything, and they're in the process of healing. And I thought to myself when I saw it, I said, well, I don't know what they can do, but I don't think they can. And just looking at it, the fact that we walked away from that, it was a miracle. And I'm saying not only was it a physical miracle, but it's a miracle of consciousness, because I've been in a mood. I noticed I'm more patient, I'm more tolerant. Not saying I'm perfect, that I don't get agitated, but I find myself, there's a passage in the Course of Miracles that talks about I can choose peace over this. So when I feel myself agitated, I'm almost automatically saying I can choose peace and reverting to back to that more tranquil environment. And like I said, heaven and hell are states of consciousness. Now in my mind, the physical environment is only a result of your consciousness. If you believe in war, if you believe in ego, and you're selfish, and you're covetous, and you're rapacious, and you're exploitative, and you're mean-spirited, and you denigrate your fellow man, that's hell on earth. If you recognize that we're all animated by the same spirit, energy, consciousness, intelligence, that means that we're all related. And that's hard. I mean, it's hard to grasp. It seems idealistic. It seems, you know, rose-colored glasses, but this is the ultimate reality. On another program, I did almost a month-long lessons on African spirituality, going back, looking at some of the Nile Valley creation stories and what the implications of those are, and trying to get the listeners to, number one, appreciate the deep thought of our African ancestors, but number two, also to get the listeners to rethink how they see the world, how they see quote-unquote God. And I don't like to use that word because it's been so maligned, so misused, so abused. It's even the concept runs counter to what most first world people understood, that the Creator is a spirit, and that we are spiritual beings, and that the universe that we see is created and undergirded, maintained and permeated by spiritual energy. This energy is intelligent. It's not just a thing, an entity. It is all powerful, it is all consciousness, meaning that we can tap into it at any time. It is that which animates all things, because it is in everything. Even the great physicists said that or saying that now. It's just that they refuse to say that the energy has intelligence or consciousness. But even now, some of their deep thinkers are saying that energy can forge matter. They understand that, but that the matter is not static, that the environment is not static, that it can be, it's amenable to thought, it's amenable to other consciousness and other intelligence. It's very much like a tuning fork. And that's what I believe happened that Sunday, that we were in a good mood. We have been away, had a great time, and we were treated well by our hosts, who went out of their way to invite us to breakfast, and we went. We had a great time, and the energy in the car was positive, up, and I believe that carried over. And by the law of attraction, we attracted people who had a similar consciousness. Everybody didn't stop, and I'm sure everybody was not about to get out of their car, go down to the ravine and see what was happening to this car that was flipped over and was landing on its roof. But through the law of attraction, because we were in such a high state of consciousness, because of the weekend, because we were enjoying each other's company on the way home, even though, you know, we're both tired, but because the weekend was so up, we gave off those vibrations and that energy, and we attracted those kinds of people to that scene. And it was all kinds. It wasn't just white folks, it wasn't just black, it wasn't just Hispanic, all kinds. And I believe that that experience is a teaching and learning experience for me, that this awareness, because again, since I did that series on my other program, the Digital Underground, which you can hear on the Harambe Radio and Television Network, I've been aware of energy, very conscious of energy, very conscious of consciousness, energy, vibrations, intelligence of my immediate space and of the type of energy I'm giving off and the energy fields I'm in amongst. And so I believe that we are all divine beings. Now, I know this is a heresy to most Western religions, particularly Christianity, with its doctrines of original sin, which, by the way, the practitioners of Judaism don't believe, and that's not part of their theology. So you have to ask yourself, where did that come from? And why is that so different from, say, first world people's approach to living in life and their grasp of reality and existence, which tends to be more spirit-oriented? Now, of course, in the West, we denigrate that, we poo-poo that, we laugh at them, we say they're superstitious, we say that, you know, if any of you can remember your grandparents, your great-grandparents, some of the things, particularly if you're older, I'm in my 60s, so I remember my great-aunt listening to her talking to her siblings, my grandmother. Her sister passed shortly after I was born, and we lived with my great-aunt, my great-uncle. But there were still about three of them left that we were in close proximity with, and I was just listening to their conversations. And they talked about spirits. They talked about communing with folks who were gone, and I would be nervous listening to it, or sometimes I would think they were silly. But the older I get, the more I realize that this is not only plausible and possible, it's happening all the time. It's just that we have closed our minds. We suffer from what I call psychosclerosis, the closed mind. The closed mind that is rigid in a materialistic way, where we've been reduced to thinking only in terms of materialism, only in terms of hedonism, only in terms of our own limited ego. I define the ego as earth-grounded orientation, where we refuse to see anything that's non-material. And we refuse to really go into a totally altruistic, holistic mode because of the ego. We're afraid that somebody else is going to get the glory, or somebody else is going to get the benefit, somebody else is going to get the reward, and the spotlight is not going to shine on us because we're so self-centered and so selfish in many ways. When in fact, first world people that the so-called modern world refers to as primitive, that's not how they view existence. They view existence in a cooperative manner. They view the world as the outgrowth of the spiritual realm, and that everything that happens in the material world has a cause and has some impetus from the spiritual world. That doesn't mean that human beings aren't sentient beings or free agents in the sense that we can think what we want and act in certain ways. It just means that we should coexist in a harmonious and aware state of existence, meaning that we should be conscious that we are spiritual beings. We're energy beings. We're energetic beings. Life is a form of energy. And that animating life spirit leaves with the final breath. The physical body begins to break down because part of that animating spirit had energy and the components to hold things together through the life process, and it is designed to break down into its elementary and rudimentary components once that life force leaves for good. Now, keep in mind that the body is always changing. We're always losing cells. We're always changing. You don't look like you did when you were 2 weeks old, and there has been numerous changes. Body's going through changes now as the life process evolves within you. It's just that when the vital life force or the God force, whatever you choose to call it, leaves, then the remains break down and to its elementary and essential components. We're spiritual beings. The energy can be ascertained and measured on a very, very limited basis. In other words, you can go in and have an electroencephalogram done so they can monitor your brain waves. They can do certain spectral things that can see the rhythm, and they can grasp or measure some of your electromagnetic energy. They call it electromagnetic, but it's greater than that. It's not just devoid of intelligence. It is energy that is conscious, energy that is intelligent, and energy that is powerful and is always seeking to unite with all the other energies in its immediate and distant presence. Because when you get into real deep thought and real metaphysics, you learn that time and space really don't exist. And I understand that that's a lot of stuff I'm saying is very, very deep and runs counter to what we're taught, particularly in a materialistic, hedonistic culture. That's why I'm asking you to entertain the notion that we can have heaven here on earth. Heaven does exist, but it exists in consciousness. And some of the great teachers teach that. It's just that their subsequent followers and subsequent religion ignored it because you can't make any money off of it. Or because they didn't grasp it, or because their goal is really to lord it over and to use the religion, the institution of religion, as a political tool. And that's not the aim of the teacher. My aim is not to get you to send me money. You know, yes, we want you to support Rainbow Soul and the Blake Radio Network, but it's not about supporting me, or I'm not saying that the creative energy needs your money. What does the spirit need with your money? So that's not the case. My goal is to get you to think differently and to think in terms of spirituality, not as some kind of spookism and not as some kind of alternative to organized religion. What I'm saying is, it is. Think of it as reality, as it is. Meaning that there is energy, intelligence, and consciousness permeating your body. That energy, that intelligence, some would call it DNA, that design, that grand design that makes you a truly unique person, even if you have a twin brother, sister, triplets, quintuplets, all of that, each one of them is different. Because the essence of the Creator is to express Him, Her, itself uniquely in as many forms and ways as possible. Because as the ancient Africans depicted it, in the beginning, it was alone. And it was just aware of its own, it was conscious and aware of its loneliness. And it creates so that it can have experiences on another level. And I believe that those levels are other dimensions, other frequencies, if you will, where the Creator can have even more experiences. And we, as emanations of the Creator, can have some insight into those other realms. And that's what we talked about in the beginning, through meditation, through introspection, through changing our mind and changing the way we think about ourselves, changing the way we think about reality. Because reality is what we say it is. The world is what you say it is. There are as many ways to see a thing as there are people to see it. And we each have the opportunity and the ability to think separately. Community is a way where we can get a cooperation amongst ourselves to think and perceive reality a certain manner. And unfortunately, it is too materialistic. Unfortunately, there is very little real appreciation of life. If you think I'm being hyperbole, if you think I'm using hyperbole, just look at television. Go to the movies and just look at the preview. Everything is killing, everything is violence, even animated motion pictures. There are very few films that come out to talk about potential of humans to move beyond crass materialism, crass selfishness, and think collectively, to think about the whole. The only time we see that in the media is when they're showing some poor third world country begging for money, and they're begging you for money. That a lot of the money that people send in does not even go to benefit those people. Or if it does, they scrape and skim off the top, so-called their fees and their salaries and things like that, administrative costs. What I'm talking about won't cost you a dime. It may cost you some friends. It may cost you how people see you. But then again, it may save your life. It may make you a better person. Because I believe those people who helped us felt better once they did what they did. They did their good deeds. And the people in the hospital called them Good Samaritan. And when I was explaining to the doctor what had happened, and she said, oh, yeah, those were good. She called them Good Samaritans. And I'm saying that we all have the capacity to be compassionate. We all have the capacity to be caring. We all have the capacity to share what we have. What we have is our gifts, our talents, our spirituality, and our humanness, our humanity, as opposed to setting up walls and being overly judgmental and overly critical and overly fearful. We can be accepting, embracing, and empowering and encouraging of one another, even if we don't know the person intimately, because the ultimate reality is we're all animated by the same consciousness, the same energy, same intelligence, and that makes us all the same. Yes, we're unique because that energy, that intelligence, that consciousness wants to experience uniqueness. But in essence, we're all the same. We're like billions of drops in the ocean. When you put it in a flask or a thimble, it's separate. But it contains all the things in the ocean. And when you pour it back into the ocean, that spiritual stream, to use that as a metaphor, it becomes united with its source and everything that's alike. And so that's what I wanted to share today and to get you to think about. Because we're on the precipice of the possibility of a new consciousness. A lot of times I was talking to someone and we were talking about the Mayan calendar. And she was saying that people have misinterpreted much of that. And I agreed with her, and I was saying basically any kind of destruction, any destruction that's going to go on is going to be the destruction of an old age, of an old consciousness, that a new consciousness is coming. The universe is trying to wake us all up, to get us out of the stupor, get us out of the matrix, so that we see things differently. And we see things with our mind. We interpret and we define what comes in through our optical facilities, because we've been taught, brainwashed, educated, and trained to accept other people's definition of things. And that pretty much constricts the way we see the world. And I'm just suggesting that we need to go beyond our psychosclerosis, go beyond our closed mind, go beyond the restrictions, and begin to see ourselves personally and collectively in a different light. Yes, it's going to be challenging. Yes, it's going to be very different and very difficult to transcend our prejudices, meaning to prejudge, to transcend the stereotypes, to transcend our conditioning, our brainwashing. But we can do it. We have the ability to change our thoughts. We have the ability to change the way we perceive the world. And all the great teachers, in essence, they say, change the way you perceive the world and you change your life. Change your thoughts, you'll change your life. Your conditions may not change. Perceptively, you may still be quote unquote poor and bereft of material things, but you have a different perspective. You become more appreciative, and you'll see that you're rich in other things. That you're rich in talent. You're rich in ideas. That if you apply these ideas, you apply these talents, these gifts, you can make money, or you can put yourself in a position where you can be a blessing and a benefit, and people will appreciate you. They might not appreciate you in the manner that you think that you should be appreciated or recognized, but you will be appreciated and recognized. And it's greater to be recognized for righteous service than for anything else, because you can be a blessing and you can make the world a better place and you can have an impact on your fellow man, because those people, and I counted about 10 of them, who came to my rescue Sunday have had a profound impact on me. I'm not talking about the professionals, the people that get paid to quote-unquote serve. But they were just as kind. They were just as caring. They were just as compassionate. And they were just as concerned. But again, the energy from the other people, I believe, created a bubble or an environment that made that possible. And then we just floated along with the synchronicity as everything played out. And so I'm saying try it. You try it and see it. You can always go back. But if it works, try it some more and see how it plays out and how it impacts your immediate environment. And I've been seeing a difference in the way I relate to people and the way people are relating to me as a result of that. And so if nothing else, because I can get a new car, I had that experience, and I honestly believe that if the vast majority, not everybody, but if the vast majority or a significant percentage of the people behaved and responded like those people did that Sunday, this world would be a better place. I, for one, want to be a part of that type of change. So I'm encouraging you to think about it and take an opportunity to be kind, be compassionate, be caring, right where you are, and see what happens. Even if it goes unappreciated, try it again. Keep on trying and see what happens. And make a commitment to serving as opposed to getting. Make a commitment to helping and to being supportive as opposed to being a taker and always concerned about yourself. And you'll be surprised that there is reciprocity. It may not come the way that you think. In fact, it's best not to even think about how it's going to come. Just do it. Don't try to limit the universe and how things played out, because there's no way that I could have anticipated something like that and itemized and articulated what happened to me. Like I said, on the way home, I thought about all the negative things that could have happened but didn't. And I'm even more appreciative. I was appreciative 2 days later when I went down and saw the car. I've been appreciative at talking with the professionals, insurance people, and all that. That it was a miracle that I am still here to share this and to share this idea with you. So take full advantage of the day and try it. See what happens. Try it and see what happens and see how it works out. And like I said, if it doesn't work out, you can always go back. But if you see an inkling of change in yourself, in the energy around you, and the way people relate to you and react to you, keep on. and see what happens. And we're just about out of time. So, as always, this is Junius Ricardo Stanton reminding you, free your mind, expand your mind, change your mind. The rest will follow. Till next time, stay strong.
Cyberspace is a place that no army with artillery can invade.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try it.